This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. And as our last feature mentioned, big natural refrigerators, pockets of chilly air, sometimes almost mysteriously pop up in certain places around the world. Now, 100 years ago, residents of one West Virginia town celebrated 4th of July each year by collecting ice from what's called Ice Mountain and using it to chill ice cream and lemonade. Hank Edenborn, who's with the National Energy Technology Laboratory, has been studying sites similar to Ice Mountain around Pennsylvania, and I caught up with him at NETL in Pittsburgh. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
So you're a microbiologist, NETL's only microbiologist. Is that what happens when you're the only microbiologist? You get sent down to the ice mine?
Well, in my line of microbiology, I've been interested in extreme environments, no matter where I've been working. And so that's led me to places in Pennsylvania that are extremely cold or extremely warm, and I'm interested in the types of bacteria that live there because they often possess unique characteristics.
I understand one of the things you're looking for is microbes that do some bioremediation. Tell me more about that.
Well, we're interested in solving pollution problems, basically, and we look for unique organisms that can break down toxic materials either in soil or water. And sometimes these live in odd places. So if we seek those out, you know, we're often the only people that are looking for them. And we may find unique metabolisms associated with those organisms that can clean up a polluted site or work under cold conditions or other kinds of things.
How did you find out about these sites?
You know, I think like many of your listeners, I'm sort of an amateur naturalist as well as a microbiologist, and I like to hike in the mountains. And I tend to seek out unique sites and sites with some sort of historical interest as well. So, you know, historically in Pennsylvania, many of these places were of interest, as you mentioned, 100 years ago, when going to someplace cold or someplace with ice was a lot more exciting than it is today. And they've kind of been forgotten, and for the most part. So I was just interested in searching them out and finding them and seeing what was, and realizing that they hadn't been studied scientifically.
What are the mechanisms you're using to study them now?
Well, the primary thing is a very simple approach of just measuring the temperature every hour inside of these sites. The technology has developed in the last five to 10 years that allows you to take a very inexpensive and small piece of equipment that may be about the size of a half dollar, and it will collect the temperature every hour and record that, and then it'll let you come back print that out, and you can see exactly how the temperature fluctuates.
These sites exist around the world. Any idea how many of them there are in our region or around the world?
One of the classic study on these sites was actually done by a Philadelphia climatologist named Edwin Balk, and he wrote a large report basically just describing his visits to these sites. And he visited something like 33 sites in eastern North America, and maybe 10 of those were in Pennsylvania. They're much more common in the Alps and in Europe and in that area, where it's much more commonly seen to have perennial ice, or ice that's lasts all year long. We don't seem to see that here very much. You know, it's almost the whole year sometimes at very unique sites. But there may have been up to 10 sites in Pennsylvania at the time of Balk's study. Some of those have disappeared over time because of traffic construction, you know, like road construction and stripping of mines that existed. One really interesting story about, sort of related to the being something of a naturalist. I was looking at these sites, and I'd gotten interested in lichens of Pennsylvania. But when I was at one of these cold sites in Huntington County, I saw a lichen that I'd never seen before. And I just pursued that in the texts and literature. And from what I could tell, it seemed to be a lichen that was from much farther north than North America, only common to maybe Maine or Canada. There were 10 different species of lichens that had never been reported in Pennsylvania because they were all from very cold environments. So they're sitting there on these in this cold site, and they can't move outside of it, because, you know, they're sort of trapped. It's kind of a chicken and the egg kind of argument, because we don't know if these organisms were there when the glaciers moved into Pennsylvania, and when they retreated, they just stayed where they were because it was still cold there. Or were these cold environments, they could have been, lichens could have been introduced by bird droppings or something like that, and then just lived wherever it was cold like it was. Not all cold sites work that way, because some just act like a hole in the ground, and they stay cold because the cold air sits at the bottom all summer, and they don't affect the vegetation and the outside the area. And I think that if scientists look carefully, they would find many, many other kinds of organisms that we don't normally care about in abundance there as well, from the Arctic and very far north. There have been parallel studies in Europe that looked at mites, spider-type organisms that also tend to be present at these sites that are normally only found in the Arctic. And those are probably, I have a feeling that those are probably here in Pennsylvania as well. It's just nobody's looked for them.
Wow. It's like, so we could sort of explore the Arctic, but without getting on the plane.
Exactly. It's, you know, it really is fascinating if you think of them as, you know, just little islands of habitat and environment that are really only found much, much farther north.
A couple of years ago, I understand that in Ice Mountain, I spoke with Stephen Kite in West Virginia, and West Virginia University, and he was saying that climate change was a threat to places like this. So anything you can mention about kind of what you're seeing out in the field?
Not so much in Pennsylvania. I think one of the lessons is that, you know, we've monitored some of these sites for a year or two. And I think the important thing to remember, you know, you hear people say, oh, we had such a cold winter, you know, so there can't be climate change. And in the same way, monitoring these cold sites for many years gives us an idea of what the long-term response is of these sites to climate. We can't expect 1 year to be the same as the one before. And so we don't know if these kinds of cold sites are warming slowly, or 1 year are colder than they've ever been. The next 5 years are warmer than they, you know, warmer. So long-term monitoring of sites, whether they're cold sites or just our surrounding environment, is really important to understanding what climate change is really all about.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me.
I've been chatting with Hank Edenborn. He's with the National Energy Technology Lab in Pittsburgh. We've been talking about natural refrigeration. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. This is the Allegheny Front.